Hello, this is Daniel Chalka.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. Hey, look at all this money. Well, Manton, I know you are busily still absorbing all of the excitement surrounding your Kickstarter. I saw that you just surpassed the $60,000 mark. This is where I like pinch you and you wake up from the dream that you were having in mid-December when you said you were going to finally launch your Kickstarter.
Yeah, had a big day yesterday. It was good. It's good to get some last momentum as I have 6 days left. This is the last show we'll do before it's done. So if a listener is curious and they have never checked it out yet, this is your last chance.
This is the time.
Don't make me beg. This is it.
Right. And of course, now you've met your modest in retrospect goal of $10,000. So you're going to get the money no matter what. And the people who backed you are going to get what they paid for.
Yeah.
But you have the stretch goal that you want to get to 80,000. I think it looks pretty good because it seems like a lot of money right now, but you've come a long way. So good luck. And it's sick, like Manton said, probably 5 days by the time you hear this.
True.
You have to go be part of history, help Manton. Anyway, I say that as preface. While big, exciting things are happening for Manton, also big, exciting things are happening in the iOS and Mac beta release world. And Apple released betas of iOS 10.3 and macOS 10.12.4. I thought there was an awful lot of new stuff in this. Like, this is a pretty, I don't know, it feels like big for quote-unquote dot releases.
Yeah, it seemed they've been doing this a little bit lately where in the middle of the year they will do, like you said, a dot release, but like with stuff. Like, it's not just bug fixes. It's like there's real new features, even new APIs outside of, you know, WWDC timeframe. And this is a good one. It's not as big as when they update things for the iPad. A lot of people, I think, were hoping for more iPad features in the middle of the year. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. We'll wait for iOS 11 maybe for that. But this is still big. And anytime you have new APIs at the level where the user notices them, you know, it's not just like, oh, here's a hidden API that'll make your app better, faster, or, you know, add some things kind of under the hood, but where the user, there's an obvious change to the user. And what I'm thinking of specifically is being able to prompt for ratings in the App Store. That's a really big thing. It's like a very, very, very simple API, one line of code, no reason not to use it, but it has a huge impact, like in just the ecosystem and to users and developers.
Yeah. And I would actually just hesitate when you said, the only thing I agree with everything Manton said, and I think an interesting nut of debate is actually in the part of what you said, no reason not to use it. Because, right, it's totally simple. This very simple new request review, all the junk you may have had in your app before that said, put up a, you know, schemey little like, do you love this app?
Right.
Yes, go review it. No, send me email.
Yeah.
Really hate it? You know, go to hell. now Apple will take care of the phrasing of that for better and for worse. This is one of those situations where there's a couple things. Overall, I think Apple is likely to design the interface to this and more tastefully than the vast majority of developers have done so far. That said, there are probably a few developers who have gone above and beyond and made a better, you know, review. By better, I mean like not only more useful, but possibly even more respectful, more empathetic with their users. Things we want. So it's kind of like there's two ways of looking at this. This new simple request review API call will probably lift up 99% of of review begging in apps, and then it might be kind of a nuisance and deteriorate their experience for 1%. And then the other just quick thing I wanted to say about it is, and I've seen some debate about this on Twitter, this only accommodates the kind of like interrupt the user, get in their face with an alert type of experience that many of us, I think, have been hesitant to embrace in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it's like Apple saying, here's the official way to really annoy your user.
Right.
yeah. And
to be clear, when I said there's no reason not to use it, I mean, if you are doing something like this.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
I think yes. I would definitely hesitate. I mean, I never prompt for reviews ever. And not that I have a huge, you know, list of iOS apps that are popular right now. But so I would really think before I use this. But if you have your own code or you're using some framework that is trying to be smart about this, I think you should immediately switch over to this in your next version, because it's a very, very simple change to make. And you're going to have to make it eventually. Eventually, Apple will enforce this, make you use it. Just use it now and be done with it. Users will be happier. When apps start adopting this API, users, not all users, but a lot of users will notice when there's a quote-unquote old app that's not using it. And they'll be frustrated because they want to go in and turn this off, or they want to know that they're not going to be prompted again that year. So you should. I think you should just use it. There's trade-offs, but you should just move on. This is, like you said, Apple. Apple's taking something that some people aren't fans of to begin with, but they're making it an official thing that's supported.
Yeah.
So if you care about this, you should just go ahead and use it. It's not completely unlike how I felt about iAds. Really, is I don't want ads in my apps ever. I don't think Apple really is thrilled with ads in apps. And so they were like, well, people are going to have ads no matter what. Maybe we should have an official way to do this, official ad platform.
Yeah.
Of course, we know that didn't turn out exactly maybe as they had hoped. But it's kind of similar in that, well, you know what? Let's just be practical. If people are going to do this, let's just make it as easy and as user-friendly as possible.
Yeah, I think I love the simplicity of it. I guess the main considerations people will have to bear in mind are like, how often do you call this request review? Because the way it's documented to work, basically request review may or may not present a request for review. it's like, I believe the deal is it will display a request for review. Definitely, I think it's all but guaranteed to do so the very first time you call it on behalf of a user. And then there is a clearly stated rule that it won't do it more than 3 times per year. And the way I read that was like, if you did it like 3 days in a row, that's fine. But then, you got to wait 362 days before you do that shenanigan again. So it's kind of weird, but I guess if I were in charge of an app that did this, I guess my first instinct would be to add some kind of like user default for how long has it been since I called request review, and then, you know, do it every 120 days or whatever.
Yeah. And I expect some people will still have some code in front of this before they, cause like there's a cost to calling this, you know, like you said, you can only do it 3 times a year. So when you call it, that's one down. And I think people will, a lot of developers, they try to do like this kind of early prompt before hitting that cost. So other APIs that are a good example are prompting for photo access, prompting for push notifications. A lot of apps will kind of say, you know, do you want push notifications or whatever? And then only if the user does, do they actually go to the system API and prompt the user, because there's a cost.
Yeah.
If the user says no or they disable it forever, your app just can't have that feature. And sometimes apps want to know ahead of time before they go to the system API where there's no turning back. So I could see some apps doing that here, but the apps need to be careful because you don't want to prompt the user twice. You don't want to say, do you want to leave a review? I mean, I guess you could, but you need to be careful about how you do it, because you don't want to recreate what Apple has already done as like a pre-step, I think.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, I could see recreating too much of what Apple has done as a pre-step, as you say, could be grounds for rejection. Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of the point. They don't, you know, it's like, you know, just imagine like the most obvious version of this would be instead of your pop-up that says, hey, do you want to rate such and such? You just say, hey, do you want to run Apple's Rater now? You know, and then it's like you're still bugging the user every day, maybe. And then they say no, 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 no. And then they finally say yes. And that only uses up one of your Apple, you know, three a year limits. I think Apple would probably, you know, reject that. So my first thought was also related to the like the limitations on this request review, because I like the idea of a standard user interface for this process. But if you can only put the user into it three times a year, then it's not really suitable for things like, you know, the more, in my opinion, the more tasteful methods people have used to request reviews, like putting it in the about box or the preferences of an app. And it looks like the compromise on that front is not to, because I was imagining something like, I don't know, somehow Apple could make it so that, you know, the UI for this, and I don't know what happens when you say yes to Apple's request review thing. I don't know if it presents then further UI within the app or if it just shoots you right over to the App Store.
Oh, it's all within the app. Yeah.
It's all within
the app.
It's
definitely within the app. There's screenshots. I don't know where these screenshots have come from, but I've seen a couple that look exactly the same, so I assume it's right, where it does a nice little modal. You know, it's like enjoying this application, tap a star, you know, you tap it, it's within the app, and you say submit or cancel. And that's another thing about this is it's much, much simpler than, I mean, frankly, a lot of what people have come up with is terrible. You know, like three buttons, it's not clear if you cancel, if you're going to be prompted again. The Apple UI, as you'd expect from them, is just much clearer to me. You either leave a review or you cancel. There's no complication, there's no confusion about like where to go next.
So I would like it if that whole in-app review process were reachable through like tactful means. And I guess I get that that's kind of hard to do, because if it's something you can create and present completely in code, then you can easily circumvent the three times a year limit, I guess. But for example, looking at the API documentation for request review, it explicitly covers the case where you want to keep something in your about box or settings. And it says, you can continue to include a persistent link in the settings or configuration screens of your app that deep links to your App Store product page. And they basically say, and I don't know if this feels kind of new to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just behind the times, but they specifically document now a parameter to any App Store product page, which is action equals write dash review. You could open a product page, and then when it opens up in the App Store, it will take the user right to the review section.
Okay.
So that's kind of the compromise is but it sounds like that's not as good of a user experience as whatever native thing they have built into the app now for the main request review thing. So
right, it's you're leaving the app instead of staying in the app. I think if you're linking like in the about, you know, screen or the settings somewhere, I guess it's kind of the user's kind of going out of their way. So I guess it's not too bad that they're shuttled off to the App Store app. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess every app needs to think about what fits their app. It's possible that not every app is going to implement this exactly the same way.
And I guess I should quickly add that if Apple decided that it's a better user experience to have the rich experience right in the app all the time, I guess they could just automatically intercept that link and just say, nah, instead of opening the App Store, we just present our custom UI here. You know, like if you design your button so that it opens a URL, I guess Apple could probably figure out how to just make that present right in the app instead.
Yeah, I don't think they should do that. I think they could, but I don't think they should do that just because they don't know in your app if you've said, you know, tap here to go to the App Store app or, you know, intercepting it seems like it's maybe too clever, not necessary. But you're right. This brings up some good points. I mean, the API is super simple, but I'm not going to say it's too simple because simple is good, but it would be kind of nice if you could have a little more control over like a callback or something that said, you know, you're out of your prompts or, you know, how many times you have left, or, you know, I don't know, maybe a little more information to the app would be useful for the app making decisions. But yeah, we'll take what we can get, right?
Yeah, and it's good to see that Apple is tackling problems, you know, specific things that people have complained about and frankly probably thought would never get addressed. And here they are. Here they're coming down the pike.
Well, and speaking of never thought they, you know, we would see this, they specifically say this is going to work on the Mac. So you're a Mac developer. What are your thoughts on, I assume in Marzetta in the Mac App Store right now, I assume you don't prompt anyone for review. Like, would you consider using this and just like a minor update or the major, you know, new version of Marzetta, or you just kind of continue to avoid this kind of stuff?
So here's the thing. I did not come away from this with the impression that the review prompting stuff would be on the Mac. I came away with the impression that the ability, this is something we haven't mentioned yet. And of course, people who've been following the news already know, but part of this is another announcement from Apple that in addition to sort of standardizing app review on iOS at least, and maybe on Mac, they are also going to add a feature that allows developers to reply to a review on the App Store. And my takeaway, and please tell me if you see something that indicates otherwise, but my takeaway was that you would be able to also reply on the app on the Mac App Store.
Yeah, good point. I'm looking at the what's new in iOS 10.3, and you're right. I misread this. There's two paragraphs. This is all they're giving us, really, except for people they've talked to in the press. The first is about the new API, and then the second is when this ships to customers, you'll be able to respond to customer reviews too, parentheses, you know, also on the Mac.
Right.
And I think I misinterpreted this because the new review API is part of StoreKit, which is across Mac and iOS. And my first thought was, oh, of course it's in that. It's on all platforms and it's a perfect fit for it. Really simple. Don't need to create a new framework or new API and now it'll work on Mac and iOS. But you're right. They don't actually say that. So it's possible that maybe the Mac won't get this right away.
Yeah. I mean, we have to just be grateful for what we get on the Mac these days. But and also looking at the request review API reference, it just says SDK iOS 10.3.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're right. But you know what? That's I'm not going to really complain about that because I've never seen a Mac app prompt for review. I mean, that's kind of weird, right? That's
it is kind
of strange. And I don't think reviews, I guess if you're selling exclusively in the Mac App Store, maybe they do carry a lot of weight, but I don't think it's quite as critical maybe on the Mac as it is on iOS, where there's just so many people looking at the App Store. And if you don't have enough reviews or your rating's not good enough, you really do scare a lot of people away.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's one of these things that's, I think, become a self-perpetuating, my inclination is to say myth, but I know that that goes against what many people feel, and that's kind of the point. But the self-perpetuating wisdom that you must beg for reviews and ratings in order to succeed on the iOS App Store. And since I don't have a lot of experience on the App Store, I can't really say that that's false. But my gut is that it's one of those things where enough people have been saying it for long enough that everybody just assumes it's true. And it's obviously not the case on the Mac. But yes, it's true that the App Store is not nearly as much of like a core discovery, you know, tool for the Mac. But, you know, I don't know. In my case, I don't make a lot of iOS software, but I still shop for iOS software. And the ways I get iOS software is usually by word of mouth or, you know, searching sometimes for specific things. I don't feel like the ratings are really doing a lot for me. I think I have enough of a skepticism about the rating system on the iOS App Store that it's not like I've been like using that as a major tool. Maybe I'm different from a lot of users, so maybe it does really help. My impression is still that the thing that helps on the App Store disproportionately is being successful to start with and getting in the charts and having the high sales numbers. And I think that that more than anything is what like perpetuates ongoing success. So I've kind of always scoffed at the idea that, well, we have no choice. We have to get in users' faces and ask them for reviews. Because to me, that feels like somebody just assuming that's the case and going with the sort of strategy that everyone else they know goes with.
Mm-hmm. Right. The review, prompting for reviews, I don't feel good about that. Like I said, I've never done it. I'm not going to say like I'd rather my app be a failure than follow all these kind of like conventional wisdom, like you said, about things you have to do. But it really would take a lot for me to want to do this kind of stuff. It just feels weird to me still, even with an official API. And I think, you know, you certainly aren't like the average mainstream iOS app store shopper, and neither am I, neither am most of the people listening probably. But I do think there is still that kind of that difference between mainstream apps that need to do all these kind of things to be discovered, to be to keep up in the top charts, and then other apps which can make a nice business for themselves through word of mouth, through hopefully being featured if they're get Apple's attention, and through just old fashioned marketing and, you know, talking to the press and, you know, all those kind of things that we're just used to coming from being, you know, Mac developers. And it's possible that some of these little tricks that people do and prompting for reviews don't apply equally to those different types of apps.
Yeah.
But I don't know, though. It's like I'm kind of like you. I mean, I have iOS apps. Some of them have, you know, kind of been moderately popular for a little while. Some of them not so much. But I don't currently have anything where I'm focused all my time on an iOS app. So I'm really like in the trenches kind of thinking and worrying about this kind of stuff and dreading when I do a bug fix update if my reviews are wiped out and no one is going to download my app again.
Right.
So you talked about customer reviews. I just want to kind of finish that part up and say, this is something I didn't think we would, I didn't think we'd be able to respond to reviews in the App Store ever.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of shocked that Apple is going to allow this. It's great. It does introduce some, I mean, you know, Apple, they're slow to do some of this kind of stuff, I think, because they don't want to, you know, like we talked about last week, you don't want to like make a change and rock the boat if you don't know where you're headed and you don't know what impact that's going to have and if it's going to sink your ship. And I think Apple has really been hesitant to do anything because, hey, look at all this money, billions of dollars coming in. Like, let's not change anything. I do think this is good, but it does have an impact. And one of the interesting impacts it has to me is I think developers are going to have to read their App Store reviews.
Yes.
Some developers just ignore the reviews completely because what are you going to do? Someone says one star and they ruin your day and there's nothing you can do. Chances are if you have a real bug, if you have a crash or something, you're going to hear about that outside the App Store review system and you're going to be able to fix it. And you're going to be able to respond to customers that email you, or mention, you know, reply to you on Twitter or whatever. So the reviews, they just kind of bum you out and they don't really add a lot. But now that you can respond, it changes things. And I think developers are going to have to go in and maybe not every day, maybe not even every week, but I think they're going to have to go in and be a little more, you know, attentive really just to what customers are saying. And I guess responding to some when it's appropriate, because users are going to expect, they're going to know developers can do this now. They're going to kind of expect it.
Yeah. And as you were saying that, the thought just came to my mind. You know, when the App Store first launched, it was very difficult to keep up with all of your reviews. When you consider all of your reviews means like reviews from each of the, I don't know how many, is it like 100?
Probably.
How many regions worldwide? And I remember in the early days, if I'm remembering it right, you couldn't just like look on Apple's site to look at quote unquote all your reviews. You'd have to go to the iTunes app and then like change your region at the bottom and then go look at your app again. So Since then, of course, I know years ago I started using App Figures to kind of just monitor all reviews. They will like collate all of them, and they'll even do a cool thing where they translate for you from other languages. But that just raises another question. No matter how attentive we are, most of us are not going to be responding to reviews that happen to be in foreign languages. So it's kind of an interesting... I'm going into this very excited that I can engage with my customers and respond to their reviews, but even more so than in my, you know, people who contact me through support, for instance, they do it through my website, which is English only, and they sort of probably have an expectation that that it's going to be, you know, I can only respond in English. And you know, if somebody writes like a Chinese review of Mars Edit, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to be able to respond to that. And that sort of bums me out, because my excitement over this is, yes, I can like be on top of all of my customers' issues and, you know, follow up with them. And that's true, but it's only true in this like admittedly large sort of subset of users that happens to use English as their first technical language, or their first, you know, their online language. And we'll see how much of an issue this turns out to be. But to be honest, Manton, as you were talking, I didn't even think that Apple provided a way still to get all of your reviews. I thought you still had to use something like App Figures. So I navigated over to iTunes Connect, and to their credit, if you look in activity under ratings and reviews, it actually collates all of the reviews. Oh no, it doesn't. It's it makes you pick still.
Okay.
But it has a list of all the countries, I guess, you have reviews from. So that's kind of nice, at least. It makes it look to me like it's not showing me all the countries in the world. It's just the countries that I have reviews from.
Right.
But of course, for a suitably popular app, that's going to end up being all the countries in the world. I've got like maybe 20, 25 here. And so I can cruise down. And for instance, like I can click Czech Republic. I have had one review from the Czech Republic, and it was on August 3rd, 2012. And it is bona fide Czech. It's not English. I can't reply to this. Yeah. And I can't tell what the review is. It's got zero stars. Oh, no, it's got 5 stars. Okay. But so this, all of this begs the question for me, if this is a great new feature of the App Store that you can respond to reviews, where is that response interface located? Because my first instinct was it would be in the same place where you write the reviews, right? Because like we go to iTunes or we go to the App Store, and we look at our app and it says, this is the reviews, and we can cruise them. But that's, of course, just for our home country. And it makes me think, will Apple be revising this iTunes Connect interface to sort of have like a queue of like most recent reviews and whether you want to reply to them or not?
Yeah.
Because right now there's no good way.
It seems like I think iTunes Connect is the right place for this. Feels like a better place, especially if you're going through a number, like let's say you only check your reviews every 2 weeks and you kind of scan through them. And if there's some low star ratings and people that have questions, like you go and respond to them like all together, you don't want to do that on like an iPhone. Like it feels like, or even in the iTunes, you know, app on the Mac, I mean, it feels like you want to do this in iTunes Connect. Also, you could maybe do some more automation kind of things, you know, if you're on the Mac. Maybe some people will even figure out the API, and, you know, folks like App Figures maybe could allow you to, you know, I don't know, just make this a little easier to respond to reviews. I have no idea if that's technically going to be possible.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're going to want this in iTunes Connect. I think that's where I would put it if it was me. But, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done this, but I made the mistake of going to App Figures and looking at some of my reviews. And for this is an app I've actually discontinued, that I haven't. I don't sell anymore. But yeah, mostly 5 stars. But you know, there's a few 1 stars in there. You know, waste of money.
Reminds you,
you know, can't connect to Twitter. Minutes later, mm-hmm. still waiting. Wasted my money. And frustrating. I wish I hadn't have looked at this, because not only can I not reply, this app's not even really supported anymore. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of reinforces what a mess some of this reviews right. are.
Do we really want this power that Apple is giving us? Right.
Right. Be careful what you wish for. Well, it's yet another thing. Like, I've always thought, you know, I felt really strongly for a long time that, like, you don't want too many support channels as a one-person company. Email is the best. That's the best way to get support. There's a lot of tools you can use to keep track of emails and responding to customers. That's the best thing. And optionally, you know, maybe you add Twitter, maybe you have forums, maybe you have something else, but you don't want too many places because it's just too much to keep track of. And this is another place. And because Apple's Apple and the App Store is huge, I don't think developers are going to be able to ignore this. I don't think you're going to need to obsess about it and check your reviews every day and respond like immediately. But I do think people are going to need to stay on top of this for obvious, you know, 2-star rating. I like the app idea, but like it crashed or didn't work, or just kind of obvious reviews that you could respond, kind of intervene and make the customer feel better. You know, an update's on the way, or email this email address and I'll be able to get in, kind of debug your problem more, stuff like that.
Yep. Well, I think this is going to be fascinating. I said on Twitter that it's going to be a huge advantage for professional and really, you know, people who are personable and professional, which I certainly try to be with my customers. And I don't think it's a priority that that most of the iTunes App Store developer base focuses on. So it's going to be, I think it could be, and I'm a little bit bummed out now thinking about the fact that, you know, we can't reply to all the foreign language reviews reasonably, but I think it will be a stark contrast the way that some developers handle it versus the way some others do. And, you know, we've been doing this for years. It takes practice to get those reviews, like you were just saying, Manton, on your review of App Figures. You have to be able to see reviews that are really, really cut to the bone and really, really make you angry, and then respond in a way that's tactical, if not tactful, because it's part of the business. It's part of the business is projecting. You have to be even keeled on behalf of the customer. And I think we're going to see that a lot of developers will not be practiced in that. So I don't know. Maybe it's going to be a mess. I don't know. But I do think that my experience with customer support going back 10 or more years now is I get very frustrated with some customers, but there's something very, very satisfying about turning an angry customer.
Yeah.
And doing that in the public spotlight of a review section on the App Store, I think will not only be satisfying, but it will be great marketing for the people who demonstrate that they're willing and able to do that, because that says to other customers, this developer cares more about his or her users than about their own feelings, than about their sense of righteousness. And I think when a customer sees that, it's not only going to make them more confident in the company and in the app, but it's going to make them tell their friends about it. They're going to be talking about it at users groups, whatever. They're going to be like, hey, did you see what Manton Reese did when somebody said his app is useless and it should be stuck in a cow manure pile and fed to a goat? And Manton said, you know,
thanks for the feedback.
Thanks for the recipe.
Yeah, I'm not perfect at support. I try, I fail sometimes. Sometimes I miss responding to people or I take too long or whatever. But one thing that I do see developers doing wrong sometimes is being too defensive and take it too personally. It's not the customer's fault. Don't lash out at them. Don't blame them. Like,
yep.
Step one, say you're sorry. Step two, say thanks in either order that you want. And then step three, try to solve the problem. And I think you're absolutely right. I think some developers doing this in public are going to need to practice getting this right, because it can backfire if in public you're defensive and you blame the customer and you don't accept responsibility. So I think you're right. Yeah. And it's going to be weird too, because like John Gruber in his summary of this on Dang Fireball said how you can only reply once, but you can edit your response and the customer can edit their response. So honestly, it's going to be a total mess, like, because the customer can say they have a problem, you respond, and then they edit their thing, and maybe they change the star rating, and then you edit your thing. Oh my goodness, it's going to be kind of a disaster, I think, but I don't know, at least we have something.
So you can respond with venom, and then say, go screw yourself, customer. And then hope that the customer sees that, and then a minute later change it to something tactful. And then nobody will ever know.
Oh, dear.
But in seriousness, what you just said about people need to learn how to respond. I thought Samuel Ford in the Core Intuition Slack had a good idea, which is somebody should write up a primer on this. Like, this now is the time for somebody to give a rundown on the basics of customer support, because there's going to be a lot of people who don't understand. It's one of those weird things. Like, we all understand it from the point of view of being the customer. We all know exactly the way that somebody responded to us as a business that set us off, or was not appropriate, or didn't get at the core of the problem. But when it comes to turning the tables and being the service provider, most of us don't have the practice or we just don't have the sense of what the mechanics are of making sure customers don't get pissed off by the way we talk to them.
Yeah.
All right, folks, this week we are sponsored by, we dropped the ball and we haven't booked a sponsor for this week. Actually, it's one of these funny things that happens sometimes around the turn of the year. Our sponsorship schedule has opened up a little bit. So if you know a company that has something great that they want to promote on our great podcast, please consider telling them to go check out coreint.org/sponsorship, because as you know, sponsorship is the main thing that keeps this podcast going. And it's been great over the past several years since we started taking sponsors to see this work, and it's what makes it so we can do the show every week. Of course, we also have our job board, which is another thing that helps us. So if you're looking for another way to support the podcast, you could let your employer know if they're looking to hire Coco developers, that they may just find a greater selection of qualified candidates on the jobs.coreint.org site than they will on a more less focused job board that doesn't really seek to reach the audience of dedicated iOS and Mac developers that we do. There's been some great listings there too if you're looking for a new job. We just had a listing from Ottawa in Ontario, Canada. It's at a company called Lightspeed. They're looking for a Coco developer. And we have something from New York City at Raiden. It's a smart luggage company. They're looking for a lead iOS engineer. And out in Denver, Colorado, Kronos Interactive is looking for a Swift iOS developer. So you can read about those and several other jobs on the job board at jobs.coreint.org. In the meantime, just keep listening and enjoy the show. Thanks for your support.
So Daniel, as we said, we covered in the first part of the show, new iOS beta stuff, new APIs, pretty exciting. Don't forget the Mac, though. Yesterday, Apple also released a beta of 10.12.4, which for Mac OS Sierra. And so we have a few new things here. I haven't been following this as closely because I was kind of just really interested in the iOS side first. But you, I think, have installed this. Is that true?
That is correct. And I've turned it. Well, it's funny. I've sort of turned a new leaf. I'm sort of, in my own mind, I'm famous for installing the bleeding edge Apple macOS updates. But it's funny. For some reason, I'm more comfortable installing the major. Like, I installed Sierra, like, from WWDC and then ran betas the whole time. I'm a little more nervous about the dot updates for some reason, which is a little counterintuitive because they should be more minor changes. But I also have the sense that that they know that not as many people install and run them as full-time systems, so maybe there's not quite as much paranoia about screwing something up. It might be totally made up, might just be my coincidence of my experience, but I feel like I've gotten burned by dot updates in a way that I feel like I haven't as much by, you know, funnily enough, by the major updates. But, you know, I took this as an excuse actually to, most of the time I just ignore the dot updates these days, unless I see something that makes me think, this is going to severely affect my software. So for example, one of the changes in this update does not affect my software, but if I were a Mac developer who used the PDF kit libraries on the Mac, I would think this would be a priority to update, because that's one of the items they say they've changed is, the PDF libraries. And as folks probably have heard, since Sierra debuted, there have been a lot of problems with the PDF libraries. So hopefully this represents them kind of finally getting on top of that. But yes, I did install it, as it turns out, because I had a bug come back in Apple's bug reporter that said, it was a Safari bug, and it said, this is fixed in 10.12.4.
Oh, nice.
And I thought, yeah, I'll go check it out, but I'm going to put it in a VMware. So I've underused VMware over the years, and it really is great to just be able to pop into, you know, I pop into 10.12 VM that I have, and I made a, a snapshot so I could go back if I wanted to. And then I just installed 10.12.4, and it was like, hey, that was easy. Don't have to worry about screwing up my work Mac. And I was able to confirm that they fixed the bug, and then immediately produce a worse bug that was only enabled. So anyway, I was able to move that along, and I haven't really played with it apart from that, but the main things that they changed seem to be that they added a Mac version of Night Shift, yeah. Which is their feature for adjusting the colors on your Mac as the time goes from day to night, and more colloquially known as the quote-unquote Flux killer, because F.Lux, you know, a third-party app for adjusting colors. In the case of the Mac, that app can, of course, keep going because Apple doesn't have App Store approval, you know, control over the Mac. But I think a lot of people probably who like that kind of color shifting stuff will use the built-in Night Shift if it works just as well for them, because I think a lot of people like Flux, but that they report problems with it. Like, whatever it's doing to achieve what it does, I think it has little glitches here and there. But that's an example, I thought, of a kind of a big change for a 10.12.4 level update. I usually think of these as bug fix updates. So things like changing the PDF libraries to get rid of bugs make sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas a whole new, like, you know, color adjustment system feature, kind of surprising to me.
Right. And this is an example of where Apple has just completely ruined their version numbering. You know, we like to complain about version numbers and how traditional and we are and always stick to certain things, but it makes no sense because, so last year Night Shift came to iOS and iOS 9.3, fine, right? Kind of a medium-sized, feature update. The problem with macOS is that Apple pretends that 10 doesn't exist. Like, to Apple, it's not macOS 10.12.4, it's macOS 12.4. And they really should have fixed this by going to macOS 11. Maybe one day they will. But until they do that, the version numbers are just weird. They just don't really match anymore.
Right. And on iOS, they still do 3-field updates.
Exactly.
So they have a place for the bug fix only stuff.
It makes sense. They really should. I just maybe they'll do that. Actually, iOS 11, macOS 11, maybe they'll do that finally. WWDC.
I think that sounds good.
Maybe they've been waiting. And as soon as they do that, everything starts to make sense again in terms of the version numbers.
Yeah, I don't know. So the other funny thing, well, not funny, I mean, it's funny to me because it feels unrelated to my everyday life, but it's probably super awesome to millions of people in the world that I guess one of the things coming to Siri is integrated cricket sports information. So, but it kind of reads funny to me. Like, I have the summary of, like, what's new in 10.12.4. Well, you have night shift, updated PDFs, and cricket scores.
Right. One of these doesn't really belong, exactly. Well, it's interesting on a couple levels. Well, first of all, you're right, not interesting to me personally, but millions of people are going to love this, right?
Yeah.
So it's an important feature, and it's a huge, big news. Like, if Siri couldn't do basketball scores until today, and all of a sudden it could, be like, drop everything. This is a major deal. So I think it's that same level to some people. But it's not like an anti-feature exactly, but it points out problems. Like, it draws attention to problems. And two specifically. One, why do they need to, like, do a new macOS version to update this? Like, why can't they update this on the server with Siri anytime they want to make it better? And two, just points out the limitations in Siri and how it's just not extensible at all. Like, you would never hear of something like this on the Amazon Echo, for example, because it's so extensible and there's so many third parties building things. There's probably 5 different ways to get cricket scores, right? So to me, great. Millions of people are going to love this, but it's also weird that it's in a macOS release, and it also just points out to me how limited Siri is compared to the potential of what it could be.
Here's an interesting counterpoint, I think. You mentioned the Amazon Echo. So another new feature I saw mentioned is, I think it was, I better look. I think it's Shanghainese. Is that a language? Because that's what I'm remembering seeing. It probably
says dictation support. So yeah,
right. Dictation support for Shanghainese. That's something you also would never see on Amazon Echo.
True.
It's one of these things where, you know, I think one of the recurring things that keeps coming up as Americans celebrate the quote unquote superiority of Amazon Echo. Some Americans. And everyone else in the world is like, great, well, we can't use that. And I think a lot of people have been sort of quietly giving Apple credit for being forward-thinking in their international approach to Siri. And interestingly enough, cricket scores, obviously, are also an international approach. So, you know, you may very well be able to add like an add-on to Amazon Echo because it's extensible that would give you cricket scores. But will it ever be able to understand the millions of Indian fans who want to use that feature?
So I'm very kind of pro Echo. And obviously I had one very first day. So I've had it for a long time. We use it every single day. I really believe this. I really think Amazon is way ahead on this. Yes, internationally, they have huge, you know, work to do, rolling out to more countries. Support for, I don't even know if it works except in English. It might still be English only. But they've got something here that is pretty big, and you only have to look at like CES, you know, this year, the Echo. I'm trying not to use the name that'll trigger people's devices. You know, voice technology all over the place in refrigerators and other weird devices, and it's so far ahead in terms of extensibility and having something that feels a little more open and powerful. And also responsiveness and speed and microphone quality. And it's just like, I really do think they're way ahead. And that's absolutely great what you said about Apple and better international support. But I don't know which is easier to catch up on. And this is kind of that similar to that argument with Apple versus Google, where it's like, Google is way ahead on services, but their UI is no good. Apple is way ahead on the UI, but their services are lagging behind. Like, who can catch up quicker? And I really think in this case, Amazon is onto something, and I think they're way ahead. So I don't know. You know, might be wrong. But like, when I use Siri sometimes, and I'm sorry, it's just not even close to as reliable as Echo. It's way slower. Sometimes it has to think and doesn't work. I don't know. I don't want to be too negative. Siri's really great, but it's not as good as when I use the Echo. It's just not.
For the record, I fall in the camp that believes, without any real education or, you know, basis for knowing anything about it.
It's the best kind of opinion.
It's a very big camp. My instinct is that actually Apple is in a much better place than Amazon, because I don't think that the catching up internationally thing is something that Amazon is going to be able to do quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And my hunch is that a lot of the shortcomings of Siri stem from its attempt to be a general purpose intelligent sort of system. And yes, if the sort of rough edges of that general purpose AI never get polished or never get honed, then you're doomed. But it's the kind of thing, I think, where you can sort of be like, you can be like 95% accurate and it's trash, and then you become like 99% accurate and it's golden. I think it's the kind of thing where it could take you by surprise. It's kind of like maps that way, to be honest. It's mm-hmm. a lot like maps, where, you know, imagine if Alexa, or sorry, imagine if Amazon had like a super, super reliable map of the United States, and Apple had a pretty good map of the entire world. And it's just like, depending, it's all that, that's, I think that's probably a poor metaphor in some ways, but it's a great metaphor in the simplicity of how you can imagine somebody in Idaho driving around with the Amazon perfect map, thinking that you'd have to be crazy to use Apple Maps ever, right? You just like, why would you ever do this? This is the most reliable map ever. And then maybe a better example is they're not driving around Idaho. They're driving around North Michigan. And then they pop over the border into Canada and suddenly they got nothing. And then suddenly that Apple map doesn't look so bad. And I think mm-hmm. there's something to that. And it's just the scale of how much work you would have to do if you're going from United States only to global, and you think, well, it's a lot more than just adding Canada, right?
So I think, first of all, with maps, I will say that Apple has made huge progress on maps, so much that I've put it back on my home screen instead of Google Maps. I think that Apple's really done good work over the last few years to iterate and improve it. And maybe it's not better in all cases, but for a lot of people, it's just right. Quick follow-up, too, on the international support. I really wasn't sure. I checked. It looks like the Echo is now in the UK and in Germany, too. So they're slowly pushing there, right? So they're probably, mm-hmm. yeah. I can very easily see them over this year spreading to a couple more countries. And maybe it won't be, you know, completely international, but they'll start figuring out, like, okay, do we have the most customers? And we'll start rolling it out. So, you know, it's almost a personal thing in some ways. Like, some people prefer different voice digital assistants, and I think that's going to continue. For me personally, we just bought another Echo. We bought the Tap or the Dot, which is, what is it? I think it's mm-hmm. the Dot. We have one upstairs now. So, kind of all in on it. I think that I really do think Amazon has a huge head start. I mean, they've got three different devices. They've been doing this for a couple years, really extensible. Not to say Apple can't catch up, but here's the problem. Apple actually doesn't have anything that competes with the Echo. They really don't. I mean, you could say Siri does, but they don't have a device that competes with the Echo. So if they want to catch up, they need a device. And when they do it, I will welcome it and I will try it and maybe I'll love it. But until they have that, they're not even really on the starting line, in my opinion. They're not really in the same game yet. So I don't know. That's kind of how I feel.
Oh, yeah. Quick rebuttal to that, because I feel like the quote unquote device that you keep in your house or keep in your rooms is a very bleeding edge nerd device right now. I know some people are getting into it, but I feel like it's the kind of thing, if I go to like my family in the Midwest and I say, like, who here has an always on speaker that takes voice commands and, you know, performs little tasks and lookups for you, be like, what? You know, like,
so,
and just as a flip to that, who here has a smartphone that has speech recognition that you can ask to do things? They'd be like, oh, I think I'd get a few hands.
Yeah. So sort of, but something is changing and it's happening right now. First of all, we have no idea how many of these things Amazon sells, because they just never release these kind of figures, unfortunately. But I guarantee you they sold a bunch of these. Like when the Dot was on sale for like $39, like at Christmas or whatever, they sold a lot of these devices. The second thing, though, is go back to what I said a second ago about CES, like, you know, the Echo Voice stuff being in like a refrigerator and toaster and, you know, whatever random device. What else kind of technology has taken off because of that kind of strategy? Netflix. Netflix used to be like, oh, who am I going to, I'm not sure I'm going to pay for not having DVDs and I'm going to stream stuff. And then you blink and Netflix is in every single set-top box, every single weird streaming device, totally pervasive. Everyone has a subscription. And I think that's what Amazon is kind of angling for. It's maybe not the same scale, but we could blink and it's going to be everywhere and it's going to be pervasive. So I don't know. I love Apple. I love Siri, but like, I think they need to catch up a little.
Well, I definitely think that they need to catch up in the same way, though, that they need to catch up on maps. And I guess where we differ somewhat is I still maintain, I think Apple's got some tricks up its sleeve. And I think it's going to be one of those things where the way that those tricks unfold, and especially given its huge advantage in so many other respects, it's going to be like, your Netflix example is great, but like, imagine if all that time Netflix was building up steam, there was like an obvious competitor that was just like waiting to like unleash its force. Like, imagine if Verizon had, you know, all that time been like on the verge of just like finally catching up. Then as soon as Verizon had its thing that was as good as Netflix and then like released it, it would be like, okay, maybe that's another case of me simplifying it and not knowing much about that market. But just to say, like, Apple can cede a lot of ground, I think, with something like this and still catch up pretty quickly,
right?
Well, because they have such advantages.
Yeah, that's true. And I think of every company, you know, in the tech world, Apple is the best at not being first, but being the best one. You know, they're 2 years late, but when they get around to it, it's so much better than everything else that it just completely upsets the market and people love it. They're great at doing that. And, you know, they did it with the iPhone. They've done it with a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm not giving up on them, but I just wish they would kind of play around in this market, because I really think there's something to the just talk to the room. It sounds geeky and nerdy and like Star Trek-y and stuff, but it just works better. It really does. It's just more efficient, I think.
Yeah. And I get a taste for it with, you know, speaking of which, I actually do get a taste for it, because even though they don't have one of those devices, Apple's, you know, always on, hey Siri. Oh, darn it.
Beep.
Beep. Hey Dingus. Apple's always on, hey Dingus, is pretty good. And, I'll be in the kitchen and my, you know, I have a little dock for my iPhone and I'll just do a Hey Dingus, you know, play the Beach Boys and it'll start. So I get a taste for it. And that's an example of where so many of the pieces are there that if they just like improve some things, you know, if they smooth some of those rough edges I was speaking of, and they put it into a dedicated device if that's what it takes to, you know, to meet certain expectations, boom, they are a contender. Like, they're just, it's a much different situation than a company where, like, imagine Apple didn't have Siri at all, and people were like, I think Apple's missing the boat on this whole spoken, you know, so it's a much different scenario than that. And it's like they have all the pieces ready to go. And on top of that, they have this like international advantage. So I think it's just, I'm not saying they're going to succeed at it, but you have to imagine that they are taking it seriously. And I expect that unless somebody's seriously bungling things, which is certainly possible, that Apple will slowly and steadily continue to move in this market. And they're already a contender even before they're actually a contender. They're a contender before they even have the device that would technically make them part of the lineup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And part of my frustration, too, is just that I wish this stuff was more open and compatible. And unfortunately, I know it's one of those kind of winner-takes-all categories. You know, I said we bought another Echo, and that's not to say we're not going to throw everything out and just use Siri eventually, but once those devices get entrenched, unfortunately, it's just makes things more difficult, much more difficult than switching your map app, you know, on the phone. So, and that's true. That's just unfortunate. Honestly, I wish I had a device where I could like say, no, I want to use Siri, or no, I want to use something else. I mean, it would be much nicer if it was open.
The fact that your Amazon Dot was $39 at Christmas means that in 2 years, it's going to be $10 at Christmas, right? And so I think this kind of technology is shrinking and being commoditized to the point that it won't be the biggest thing in the world if you make a decision as a family that we need to redo our whole house with a different, you know, a different intelligent agent. It might be $100 change of technology at some point.
Cool. Well, it's fun. Gosh, big debate here with Echo versus Siri. This brings out I think everybody has a strong opinion about this. It's like they have their favorite voice assistant, and I guess that's fine.
Yep.
So
I'm definitely biased towards Siri, and I have been for a long time because for whatever reason, I've found the ways to coddle it to do my bidding. And I know some people have just been offended by its incompetence and you know, haven't worked with it. But to my mind, it's like, well, this thing's changing my life in ways that, frankly, no other voice assistant can because I'm bought into Apple's ecosystem and I can't do, you know, I can't do Hey Dingus for the other brand on my iPhone.
So that does point to, and it gets to this problem of no compatibility at all between some of the stuff. If you have all your stuff in the Apple ecosystem, or you have it all on Google's cloud, whatever, you know, calendars and email and everything, that does make it more difficult sometimes to use competing services because you don't, like, let's say you want this device to have access to all your email and it doesn't, or have access to your calendar and it doesn't. So so if you're all in on one thing or another, sometimes it makes it easier or not. I mean, also you don't have an Echo, and I'm not going to say your opinion is not valid, but like, you don't have
true.
One.
I've never even tried
it's one,
one
of those things where like, it's really, you know, you kind of, and I don't have the Google one either. Right. So like maybe if I had the Google one, that I'll be like, oh my goodness, I've been missing out. This is the real thing. So obviously we shouldn't all buy every one of these gadgets, just to test them out.
No.
So anyway, good debate. And thanks everyone for listening to the show today. We got some exciting news this week, new Apple betas. I'll be putting the iOS beta on my phone. Why not? I seem to be putting those on lately. And we will follow up later as that stuff becomes final and see how customers react in the real world when apps are prompting them and developers are replying to reviews. It's going to be really fascinating. I'm kind of looking forward to looking at what developers do before I dip my own toes in the water and participate.
we can start a oh no you didn't developer.tumblr.com. Right. Just highlight the worst responses from developers.
It'd be funny if users could rate the developer response one star or five stars. All right. Well, don't forget the jobs board, jobs.corrent.org. Don't forget, if you have any feedback or questions for the show, feedback@corrent.org or on Twitter @corrent. And don't forget, last chance to back my Kickstarter project.
Right.
Check it out, micro.blog. I would love your support. And everybody who has backed it, everyone who has sent me comments or, you know, supported it in kind of spirit or on the Slack, thanks very much. I really appreciate your support.
And final word, just keep in mind, if you know somebody whose sponsorship of our show would be a perfect fit, remind them to go check it out at corrient.org/sponsorship. Thanks again for listening, and we'll chat with you again next week.
See ya.